Today I will talk about a method which allows to deal with classical systems with an infinite number of derivatives. And I moved recently to Penn State, but as I've done all this work at the University of Sussex during my previous fellowship, I just put below the of my former institution. And this is based actually on a bunch of works done in collaboration with Giuseppe Nardelli of the University of Brescia and one of his PhD students. And the main motivation actually stems from a particular sector of string theory, which deal with which describes unstable systems, unstable brain systems, typically characterized by an open or, depending on the configuration, a closed string perturbative mold, which is the tachyon, which has been studied in different frameworks with different techniques. The first pioneer works have been done by Ashok Sen using conformal field theory techniques. But there are other approaches, one of which makes use of an effective action of the Dirac-Bornier-Full type. However, there are other frameworks which are non-perturbative, and they are candidate for describing interactions between strings. One of these is called boundary string field theory, and the other is open, or also called a cubic string field theory, both of which were first considered by Ed Whedon. There are some excellent reviews about all these setups, one by Sen and one by Omori, which is mainly concerned on open string field theory. Now, we can start our investigation from the effective action of a bosonic open string field tachyon, and by switching off all particle fields except the tachyon, one ends up with this effective action where d is the dimension of a space-time, in this case 26. Alpha prime is the Verager slope, and r star is a number which is fixed by conformal invariance, and it's around 0.26. And as you can see here, there appears at the level of the potential an operator which is made of an infinite sum of null inversions. And theories with an infinite number of derivatives are sometimes called non-local. And the reason is that they can also be expressed as with integral type of interactions. Now, as this action describes the decay of an unstable brain, we would like to understand what is the evolution of this field in order to have control over this non-perturbative process. However, we meet a number of difficulties because it's not straightforward. Non-local theories are not straightforward generalizations of higher derivative theories. And one can see this by considering the Cauchy problem, which is non-standard, because if you have an infinite number of derivatives, you should, in principle, produce an infinite number of initial conditions. But if you know all these initial conditions, and if the solution is analytic in a neighborhood of your initial point, then you already know the Taylor expansion of the solution itself around the initial point, which is certainly not the case as regards standard dynamics. Also, the Hamiltonian formalism is not well defined because you would have an infinite number of degrees of freedom, ever from momenta. And in case you are interested in quantizations of these classical theories into field theories, then of course you meet with a problem. On the other hand, it's also difficult to construct solutions of these equations at the classical level. And until very recently, only perturbative methods were available, which expanded the no-local operator into a finite number of terms. However, one can argue that this expansion does not lead to a well-defined approximation of the original theory. As a side remark, I would like also to say that people, including myself, were interested also in applications of these no-local theories to inflationary scenarios. But it seems that these two ideas, which is no-locality and inflation, are not in good terms, because while inflation tends to raise the memory of initial conditions, actually a no-locality tends to retain this memory. So it seems not easy to implement these two ideas simultaneously. And in fact, this lower approximation in this case seemed to be to require a much stronger statement. Then the main question is also, what are the non-perturbative solutions of that effective action? And they have been found recently, but the coefficients as a series, but the coefficients of this series are nested integrals, which are very difficult to compute. So one again should rely to numerical methods, or to non-perturbative, to perturbative solutions, that is, which where the series is truncated up to some order. But in this case, it's by definition, it's not possible to determine the convergence or not of this perturbative solution. And also, as I mentioned, one would like to explore no-local models also outside of Minkowski backgrounds, and in particular in the case of inflation. This was done again perturbatively by Arefieva and collaborators. And the main idea is that as we have other frameworks where the tachyon is well under control, and I'm thinking about the DBI formulation, one would like to compare the DBI predictions with those of string theory. And the reason why the DBI framework is under control is that it's local, so we have a finite number of derivatives, so we can apply standard dynamics. However, this tachyon seems to be, at least in its old formulation, ineffective as a dark energy, or if you look at more physical scenarios, like I'm considering it in at early times, it seems to suffer from tunings, which are no better and maybe even worse than a Klein-Gordon field. So there's not really any robust motivation why to consider a DBI tachyon instead of a Klein-Gordon field as the inclusion. And this is because its equation of state is very rigid, but this is not the case for the non-local tachyon. So one question is what kind of solutions can we find which can be of cosmological use? I will not answer to this question today, at least to some level. Because we found that the problem of finding solutions in no-local models has a very interesting structure. And we can start from an effective equation of motion for the scalar field of this form, where K is a kinetic operator, which in The OpenStreetMap case is this form, where you have the mass term, and actually this mass squared is negative. And the potential is monomial, cubic type for a bosonic tachyon, and quartic for the supersymmetric tachyon. And R star, as I said, is that number. However, there are other models, like the Piatic string, which, if you like, is a toy model which shares many features of the string model. And in that case, actually, the kinetic operator is trivial, so you have only an exponential acting on the field phi. Again, the potential is a monomial, and R star is, again, a number. There is we found an interesting recipe, which if you follow down to its conclusions, allows you to consider these models as local, and also to find concrete solutions. And actually, it happens that all the issues I mentioned, like the problem of initial conditions and the Hamiltonian formulation, seem to be addressed, and it's there is this provides also a way to construct non-perturbative solutions. There are numerical methods which may get even better results than this analytic method, but and you can see the papers by Lyudmila Zhukovskaya. But as I like to do things with a pencil and paper, I will stick to this today to this analytic method. Now, the idea, the starting idea is a bit crazy. That is, I tell you, take 0.26 and promote it to a variable. So basically, one considers this R star as the fixed value of an auxiliary evolution variable R, and therefore one promotes the scalar field to one living in d plus one dimensions. And the initial condition at R equal to zero, it's it is regarded to be actually the initial configuration of the dynamics along the radial direction R. While the final point, when R hits R star, is the non-local solution.
Just one more variance?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so this generalization, you're, when you consider the field to be a function of other values,
absolutely,
of R star,
yes.
So this corresponds to some non-formal model and exploring towards a conformal point, or?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, it's a mathematical trick, so. Which actually, my starting point was effective action. So the level of effective action, I cannot even see conformalities because it's an action in the target space time. But certainly in yes, it loses any concept from the very general conformal field theorem. So we can write an action which is actually local in the space-time coordinate and lives in d plus one dimensions, where the first term is reminds the Lagrangian density for a scalar field, with a notable difference that one of the fields is evaluated at a different point along the auxiliary direction. And there is an extra term where there is an auxiliary field, key, interacting with the scalar field, phi, capital phi, through an integral interaction, where r prime and r second are just just depend on R and S, so that this thing is actually, this integral integrates over the field auxiliary coordinates. So this is my starting point. And if you do the variation with respect to these two fields, you get some interesting results. The first one is that you get this equation of motion, which is evaluated at the final point R star. And a variation with respect to the auxiliary field gives you this equation, which is actually a diffusion equation, which is first derivative in R and second derivative in space-time coordinate. And the first equation is true only if this constraint is implemented, which is the auxiliary field is actually the field phi upon which the kinetic operator acts. Now, the diffusion equation is the key point. Its solution is of this form, where gamma, I haven't mentioned, is so far is an arbitrary parameter. It's not constrained by anything. This is the only solution of the diffusion equation, where here you see a feature in the initial condition. And it has this beautiful property of translating no local operators in translations in shifts of the auxiliary variable R. So whenever you have this no local operator in this language, you can show that actually its effect is of translating the auxiliary variable R. This property allows to localize what was actually the original no-local model because of this property, and so the system, the field, and the system is local in a space-time coordinate, and this result holds for any background because I haven't specified what is my background d-dimensional metric. So in this sense, is covariant in the d-dimensional submanifold. But of course, it is not covariant over the D plus one manifold. And one immediately gets what we were seeking for, that is a solution of a Cauchy problem in the sense that no locality here disappears. And also the number of degrees of freedom now is well defined because it consists actually in two fields, so four initial conditions for the dynamical problem. Yes?
I mean, I guess it's not completely a surprise that the Cauchy problem is well defined. That is, when you have a non-local theory, what you should look for is how many zero local here has the kinetic term has. And in your case, it's exponential p square.
It's an
square. So there's only one zero, which is p squared equal plus, you know, plus or minus m squared. So,
yes.
So in that sense, it is still usually relativistic. So there's always a confusion that if you truncate any non-local system at a polynomial order,
well, you get ghosts.
Then you get ghosts. But if you don't truncate it, then this ghost disappears.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
In fact, this is precisely the reason why I claim that truncation of the non-local operator doesn't give an approximation of the original theory. Yes, I will talk about the perturbative propagator in after a couple of slides. Thank you. There is also a byproduct which comes for free, which is the energy momentum tensor can be computed in two lines. And it is of this form. And for the time being, I neglect the mass term, but it's straightforward to generalize these equations to in a vanishing mass term. So the first piece of energy momentum tensor resembles that of a scalar field, but with the, again, with the difference that here, the field is evaluated at different points in along the auxiliary variable. While the second part, which is an integral, is involves the interaction between the two fields. And the key point is that the structure of this this energy momentum tensor is exactly the same of that of the original local tensor. In the original local tensor, you should have to compute the variation with respect to the metric of this object here. And typically, this can be written down as either as a sum of an infinite terms of precisely as an integral with some identity. You can do it. It's not complicated, but it's quite lengthy. And in the end, you will find this answer here, where instead of a key, you have box of a scalar field phi. So
sorry,
gamma so far is absolutely is completely free. Yes. I haven't said anything about gamma. I will in a moment.
So the thing I understand, you have a d plus one dimensional system now, right? So
this energy momentum tensor is defined via the d dimensional metric. So it's not the d plus one dimensional tensor because the theory is not large.
But in that dimension, it's still non-local because you are having that.
Yes, it's an, if you want, your equations of motion become second-order differential equations for the space-time coordinates and difference equations for the extra auxiliary coordinates. Yes, that's correct. Now, it may be interesting to compute the Hamiltonian explicitly. And after defining the metro Lagrangian, one can find the conjugate momenta to the two fields, which are these two gentlemen, where, as you can see, there are some integral pieces. Now, it's not really important what is the form of these momenta, but anyway, it's possible to show that you can write them explicitly. And so also the Hamiltonian makes sense because after defining equal time Poisson brackets like this, where now there is also a delta distribution in the auxiliary direction, one can write down the Hamiltonian. It is... one can check, of course, that the diffusion equations the equations of motion reproduce the diffusion equation and the scalar equation of motion. And the key point in this calculation is that there are some boundary terms in the integral interaction in DS, which must be taken into account in order to get the correct results.
D plus one dimensional space? Because I mean, you have an extra dimension, so
yeah.
That gives you basically infinite more degrees of freedom, doesn't it? That's the part that's confusing.
Well, the point here is that you had, in a local case, you had an infinite number of degrees of freedom because you had these so many derivatives. Mm-hmm. And all this infinity is transferred to this extra direction. So that's actually, in fact, now your configuration in the your initial configuration in the auxiliary direction is a field configuration, t not x. So that is an infinite number if you want to the initial conditions from the point of view of the d plus one theory. But this trick allows you to, if you want, you shift the problem to a sector which you have under control. In fact, I'll show you now how to construct
it. It is under control, but it's, you have infinite, basically. There are many more degrees of freedom than an ordinary local theory, right? Or not?
Well, from the point of view of the d-dimensional theory, you have more, but not infinite more.
Is that infinitely more?
No, because as I said, you have your Cauchy problem can be defined by four initial conditions.
But that, for example, initial condition was phi of x and r at initial time, so it's all over the surface of r values at some certain time.
Yeah,
time.
So there are infinite R values, right? So so you have many more initial conditions than.
Well, the point is that you are considering a flow along this direction, which must fit the physical system where R is fixed. So in my region system, R was not a variable; it was a number. So at the end of the day, I would have to fix R to my physical value, whatever is my was my original model. So in that case, you freeze your evolution along R when it hits your physical system.
Maybe can you go back to two slides where you say
yes.
Initial conditions? You say, yeah. So phi dot chi dot R at R equal to zero or for any R?
For all R. Well, the initial the diffusion equation is
because the diffusion equation, yeah, allows you to integrate R. So it should be at R equal to zero.
Well, it depends. Okay, if you want to, maybe there is some maybe a source of confusion. By Cauchy problem, I mean the Cauchy problem in the dimensional manifold.
In the
d-dimensional manifold. Okay. So you can consider different initial condition problems. One along the R direction, and your initial condition is this field configuration. And one is what you're really interested in is when you fix R equal to whatever, and you ask and you want your system to evolve from some initial configuration X naught. That is the Cauchy problem I'm referring to. Because at the end of the day, I will have to freeze R and to go back to my physical system. Does it make sense?
So your statement is four initial conditions on Rx or on X alone? On Rx at this stage.
Okay, these fields are with a fixed R, okay, and X naught, which is your initial point.
Now here comes the problem how to make use of this machinery to construct solutions of the original systems. And here the initial field configuration along the R direction comes into play. Because now you have two choices. When R is equal to zero, the equations of motion actually become those of a local Klein-Gordon field. So in principle, if you choose this phi naught x as your local solution, you have it under control, provided that you have a simple enough potential or matrix such that you can solve analytically your local Klein-Gordon equation. So if this were the case, we know what is phi naught x. I give you a potential, I give you a metric, I solve the local equation, and I get this function, which is a local system. And we wanted to make contact with a non-local system we are really interested in. So if phi is a smooth solution, then one can proceed by first finding the eigenstates of the D'Alembertian, which of course will depend on the metric, which can be Minkowski or Friedman, Robertson, Walker, or any other metric of interest, and write the local solution of the local system as an expansion on the basis of the Green function. Which is an integral if the spectrum is continuous, or also sum if the spectrum is discrete. And then applying the E to a box operator to this object, you see that it will act only on the Green function. So it will introduce a Gaussian factor inside this integral. And I call this Gabor transformer because in the case of Minkowski, the Green function is just a phase, and this integral is of a type of Gabor transforms. Now, This thing, by definition, satisfies the heat equation because of the very construction. And here is the crucial point, which is this is not a priori, nothing guarantees that this is a solution of a no-local system. I have to check it. I have to plug this guy inside the equation of motion at r equal to r star and check whether there is a gamma and another parameter which another free parameter which appears as a normalization of the potential, such that this thing is a solution of a no-local equation of motion. This step is non-trivial. Its success is not guaranteed by anything I've said so far. And ultimately may lead to three cases. The best possible word is that this is actually an exact solution of equations of motion. So I can find some gamma and the other three parameters such that this is true. The second occurrence is that this is a solution but approximate, that is asymptotically, say near the Big Bang or at the infinite future. Or the worst possible case is that this is not a solution of a system. And the outcome of this research will depend on the system you're considering. But the key point is that here it makes sense to study this function locally, while it was not possible with perturbative methods because we were already restricting the space of solutions which we were probing. So here, at least, it makes sense to look at asymptotic solutions. But of course, one would like to find global solutions. Now, the second choice is even simpler, that is to take the initial field configuration as the constant solution of a local equation of motion almost everywhere. That is, I take a distribution. So a distribution may be, for instance, a delta function or a step function. And it happens that when the flow along R is switched on, this, in some sense, regularizes or smoothens the distribution to some smooth function. And again, then that function will depend on gamma. And one will have to check that that is really a solution. But anyway, in this case, you will not need to follow the steps of to define those integral transforms. Because if you take a simple distribution, it is already known what is how the regularized version. And so you can just proceed to check the equations of motion. I give some examples of both cases. Those are not the only examples we considered, but they may be at least characteristic of what you may expect to find in these cases. The first one is the original system, which is a cubic string field theory. Actually, supersymmetric, which is our potential would be quartic. And the background in this case is Minkowski, therefore no curved metric. Actually, the supersymmetric potential is more complicated than a simple quartic potential. There are other no-local operators inside, but one can show that it's absolutely straightforward to make this analysis with this type of potentials, where phi tilde is, I don't remember if I've written it in the previous slide, but this is a sort of dressed field. So inside phi tilde, there are other no-local operators. At the end of the day, the solution turns out to be this guy here, where K is the heat kernel, which is a Gaussian. And it is multiplied times a harmonic function, which contains only integrable poles. There is also a serious representation of this object. It's a solution which is global in the sense that it is valid at all times. But it is not exact. However, it is almost exact in the sense that if you if you check its accuracy, you will find that the error will be very, very small. So one can consider this as a satisfactory solution at all times, and which at least reproduces qualitatively what the exact solution would be. There are other techniques actually which can be employed to find the same result, and which I haven't discussed today. Yes?
For a source, or what is the initial condition for this solution?
It's an even solution. I will show you in the next slide. In fact, this is a picture of the solution. It's the solid line, and it vanishes at infinity. It has a spike at the origin, in the sense that one would expect the second derivative to develop a delta, but because of as the poles of the logarithm inside the integral are integrable, you can show that the coefficients in front of this delta factor is actually zero. So this is a solution of self-theology. Actually, there is another solution hidden in what I've said, that is, if you analytically continue the solution from negative times to positive times, you can find another behavior where, which is represented by this dashed curve, where, as you can see, there are wild oscillations which increase as time passes. And this is this wildly oscillating solution was already known in some years ago, and people were puzzled about its interpretation, because one could not consider this as a ghost, as attacking condensate. However, recent results, which makes use of a Schnaught gauge, show that this solution, wildly oscillating solution, can be mapped via finite gauge transformation to some solutions of boundary symmetry theory, which make more sense. The main point is that both the wildly oscillating solution, which is smooth but unbounded, and the spiky solution, which is bounded but non-analytic at a point, can be obtained via this diffusion equation method.
Your variables that you would never found tilde.
Sorry?
With that kind of variables that were introduced by tilde,
yeah.
If you do that in the original action, isn't that just going to give you a local interaction and a regularized connected term?
Yes. In fact, the original action, yes, the original action is in a local potential and a local kinetic term. If you write the action in terms of phi tilde, you get the other way around. And in fact, my starting point for the 1 plus d-dimensional system was a field with a no local kinetic term and a local potential.
Isn't the kinetic term just regularized? It?
Sorry?
It just looks like a regularized kinetic term that's come off the ultraviolet.
Yes.
Is that really modeling? It just looks like,
well,
you've got a regularization of a local theory.
Well, the at the non-perturbative level, yes, it's not. At the perturbative level, I can show you in the next slide, and it's related with the other remark. At the perturbative level, yes, it's the same as a local field. But when you have some potential which you cannot neglect, then
the potential is local. The kinetic term is just essentially part of the ultraviolet, so even non-perturbatively, expect that to just be a local one.
Well. Yeah, but how would you be able to solve that equation? I mean, it's the original equation I presented. Right. Yeah, this one.
I agree. In fact, these theories were studied by Efimov, and they were found to be super renormalizable. But still, the problem remains that you would like to find some solutions which will behave in a different way than a theory where you do not have this Gaussian factor.
It's just if the Gaussian factor can just be arranged to occur in Connecticut and it just serves the role of regularization, then in some sense it would.
Yeah, but it's still non-local. I mean, there's no way this type of equation has a priori all the problems we assign. Especially if you start to truncate it, for instance. There's an arbitrary number of derivatives, prime derivatives.
So the thing I don't understand is that, so that was time dependence of your solution, right? That's the thing you were showing just before this, right? The horizontal axis is time, right?
Yeah, and the vertical is the solution.
So this is a solution. This is basically, I guess, a Green's function for this theory. Is that right? Or so if you turn on a source at time itself, at t equal to zero, and this is how it's supposed to be, or? But this, what happens at t equal to zero?
Which solution? The wild oscillating or the spiky?
The spiky one.
Oh, well, the intuitive picture, which is not so intuitive, is that you have this double wall potential. You start from your false vacuum, and you roll down, say, in the right true minimum. What happens is that the classical particle would roll up to this inversion point and then go back. In the non-local case, you have some force coming from this non-local interaction, and it happens that you arrive at an inverse point which is below the classical inversion point, and you bounce back to the false path.
So t equal to zero is when you...
Yes, t equal to zero is here. When, yes. Now, if you take the, you say, I'm not happy about this thing, I cannot understand it. Okay, take the wildly perturbative solution. What happens is that you start from your false vacuum, you go and you just go up, you go down, go up again. So it's no locality does really do something to the physics. You can also picture this as a classical particle, as a standard.
So but the derivative is well, you have infinite derivative at t equal to zero, or is it well discontinuous derivative at t equal to zero? And so why do you have that? What happens? I mean, is something special when you reach the maximum that your curve is broken?
No, well, I said this is a spike. It means that the function here is continuous but not smooth at the origin.
Yeah, so why is it in the smooth?
Well, if you write this as a series instead of an integral I showed you, this is actually the collage of two series, one for positive time and one for negative time. So. If you take the series at negative times and you define it to be valid at all times, analytic continuation, then you would get the wild oscillation. Otherwise, if you glue the positive time series, you will get the spike. And if you look at this at the integral form, at t equal to zero, this is logarithm of 1 plus the sine. So this guy will pick up the zeros, the poles at sine equal to minus 1. And one can do analysis using actually complex variables and writing this as a complex integral. And so you can regard this as a control integral. And the result will be all the same. There are ways where if you write this thing with not in this way, but integrating by parts, you will indeed get the delta function. So that will not be a solution on the equation of motion because there is no source in equation of motion. But in this case, the key point is that the fact the the factor in front of the delta factor is identically zero at t equal to zero. So I agree that it's counterintuitive, and actually this solution doesn't even explain what is stacking condensation. A better framework is back racing to theory of SPs. In that case, it's everything is local, and we have a nice picture of the solution. Well, nonetheless, this is what you get. Now, I can see some result which, if you want, is the converse of what I said, which is before I started from a local solution, which I haven't mentioned actually, but in a string field case, in a supersymmetric, for a supersymmetric pattern, the local solution is a hyperbolic sign. And for the bosonic case, it is actually hyperbolic cosine squared. So this is smooth function, which becomes spiky when you turn on no locality. So what happens if I start with a distribution like initial configuration? Then it happens that no locality actually smoothens this distribution. And as an example, one can take, for instance, the chaotic spring and start from a delta factor, which whose regularization, as you know, is just a Gaussian. And if you take a flat chaotic case, is that with a kinetic operator identically equal to one? So you have e to the box phi equal to some phi to the p. So in the Minkowski case, this is actually the soliton which was found in the original paper by Brecke, Witten, and collaborators. However, it is immediately it is straightforward to generalize this to say an FRW metric. In that case, there is the Hubble parameter will be will go as inverse time, that is, you have power law cosmology. And I don't show any other equations because actually there aren't. This is if you want a trivial result of how to regularize the distribution via the diffusion equation. So if this this result, if you want, is a trivial byproduct of this formalism. Another example is when you want to look for instantonic solutions in the Euclidean theory, and going back to open stream field theory, one can start from a sign which is smoothened. It's a smooth version, it's actually a variable function. Well, gamma now is what I can show to be fixed by this to be this object here, where R star is again 0.26. It's not an exact solution because at intermediate times, in these corridors, the accuracy of the solution is around 1.5%. However, at asymptotically and near the origin, the accuracy is much better. So one can consider this as a global solution, but approximate.
Yes, because they don't know the accuracy.
Well, but you can compute the, as I wrote in the other slide, if you take your equation of motion, I define my accuracy to be, if this is my equation of motion,
yeah.
I just consider the error.
Yeah.
It's a very simple thing. Another thing you can do is consider the L2 norm of your equation of motion.
But I mean, you agree this is not very robust because I mean, for example, I can square the two sides of my equation of
yeah.
That is between twice as much error, right? If I just square both left hand side and right hand side, plug it in this formula, I get twice as much. Is that right? I think that's true.
Well,
this is not really the error in the solution. This is some measure of the error problem, but maybe a very bad measure of the error.
Well, actually, because as I said, if you take your L2 norm and you integrate it with along the real axis, and you divide it by the with a original motion plus with a plus sign, you get something which is similar to your magnitude.
Let me give you another example. I mean, you might have an instability somewhere. Okay, let's say your particle is going right there. So you have a particle that's moving this way, it either goes this way or that way, for example. It bumps somewhere and there's an instability, it either chooses this direction or that direction. And you are satisfying the equation of motion everywhere, basically, almost. But if you make a small error in your calculation, your particle is not going this way, it's going to go that way. There's only a small place where you're actually making an error. Everywhere else you're solving an equation of motion. But that small instability causes a huge error. That small error in solving an equation of motion causes a huge error in your solution. So I guess I'm saying that this is not necessarily the accuracy of your solution. It's an accuracy of, well, it's something else.
Well, I mean, in this case, as asymptotically in the future and past, your equations of motion are better and better solved by this function here. Whatever error you make in this part, that in some sense will be localized to some time interval where you cannot pass this error function. But I think you can devise the other error estimates, but my guess is that you will find qualitatively the same result. This is at least this is my guess. By the way, this model has been computed numerically. You do find kinks, but with some sort of bumps. And except for the region of the bumps where I already know that my solution is not in excellent.
And did you find that numerically? Is that
this thing was found numerically by IPM collaborators a few years ago.
Okay.
So you do have kinks. You have some features, and if you want to do things analytically, you have at this approximate solution which captures qualitatively what happens. But of course, numerically you can get more accurate results. I agree. Yes. Now, to conclude, I want to mention briefly an interpretation of this formalism in terms of a normalization group flow. I consider the initial points along the x direction as the infrared of a theory where one considers a local regime and
the theory is under control because physics is local, so we know how to deal with it. While at a finite point along the flow, there is the physical scale dictated by R star, which in turn depends on your model, where observations take place. So you have that is where no locality comes to play, and you will observe some effects which which will be typical of this regime. If you truncate the no local operator at finite order, This would be the same as to consider a perturbative expansion, which diverges. It is clear if you consider the poles of the scalar field. And I have also other examples which show that if you try to construct solutions with a given metric and a given potential by considering the action of k times the D'Alembertian over the scalar field, and then you try to sum up the series, this thing diverges. So in other words, this field phi tilde defined in this way. If I give you field 0x, this may be ill-defined, it blows up. However, if you take the same metric, same potential, and you do not make use of this the Taylor series of the exponential, you get a field phi tilde which is well-defined. And so there is not even an issue of convergence. Also, if you take the free field limit and the Euclidean propagator in momentum space, as we already anticipated, there is a Gaussian factor here, and there is a natural cutoff scale, depending on R star, which suppresses modes with momentum larger than this cutoff scale. And those were precisely the modes responsible for the perturbative divergence. And as I said, these theories fall into a class called supernormalizable, precisely for this reason. And now one can see also, one can see also what is the origin of the 4 degrees of freedom I mentioned before. If you take the perturbative limit of this theory, which is you neglect the potential, you are actually neglecting the auxiliary field key. Because the auxiliary field key, which was k phi, is related with the potential. So in that case, your free field module of this Gaussian prefactor is actually behaves as a local field, and in fact, in that case, you have two initial conditions, one for phi and one for phi dot. If you, on the other hand, and by the way, this perturbative sector was considered by Neil Barnaby, Nicky Cameron, and also by Neil and Jane Klein in periodic inflation, where they make this free field approximation. However, if you turn on the potential, whatever it is, you will add 2 degrees of freedom, which are both related to this auxiliary field. Now, finally, before concluding, I mention if I have 2 minutes, do I?
Yeah. Okay.
I mention a strange correspondence, which can be unraveled by this flow along this auxiliary direction between different string field theories. The first one is between the periodic string and open string field theory, because the former can be seen as a limit of a non-propagating open string field tachyon. And the reason is that under this coordinate transformation, one can write the non-local equation of motion in this way. So when R is actually R star, this is nothing but the open string tachyon equation of motion. However, if you send R star to infinity, this becomes the periodic equation of motion. Sending R star to infinity is tantamount to sending to zero the ultraviolet cutoff, so this field actually does not propagate at all. However, this is only formal correspondence because in this limit, the coordinate transformation is singular. So it is not possible, for instance, to find the solutions of one system starting from those of the other.
On the other hand, the periodic string is also related to boundary string field theory, which I haven't discussed today. But the main point is that this boundary string field theory can be seen as a diffusing system whose solution is the same of a periodic string. In fact, one can show that the diffusion equation the diffusion equation evaluated at the lump solution become of this form, and this is precisely the Kutasov-Marino-Moore or Gerasimov-Shatashvili action for boundary string field theory, which is local because it's approximate up to two derivatives in the scalar field. Finally, there is a correspondence between open string field theory and boundary string field theory, because one is in the bosonic case is can be shown to be the primitive of the other. However, in the supersymmetric case, this relation is less transparent and can be more clearly seen in terms of complex integrals. To conclude, I've proposed a method which can allow some systematic treatment of these non-local systems with exponential type non-local operators, and also to find solutions which do not require a truncation of these operators. Some examples show that it's possible to find global although approximate solutions in different setups. There are other examples where some solutions are actually exact or only asymptotically. And there are, I tell you, also examples where we weren't able to find solutions at all. For a cosmological case, anyway, we did find some asymptotic solutions in toy models, and also in the periodic case. Interpretation issues, at least at the classical level, seem to be addressed. However, there are many open issues. If you take a potential motivated by string theory, like the double the Mexican hat potential, it's the analysis is quite complicated. So we and is still in progress. I haven't mentioned anything about the gravitational sector, although it would be very interesting to see how a non-local matter component would behave in a non-local gravitational sector. And in fact, for consistency, one should expect to find these operators also in other sectors of the theory. The problem is that there is nothing such a non-perturbative, non-local effective action for the gravity. There are some proposals for toy models. However, I mean, the field is still quite quite open to our study. And finally, I briefly mentioned the pulsing correspondence between different string field theories, whose physical interpretation actually is still to be assessed. Thank you.
Anyone?
In your case, you should, there's another propagating in the degrees of freedom, the one of time, right?
Yes.
So what is the interpretation of this one?
Sorry?
What is the interpretation of that guy?
The interpretation?
I mean, phi is the tachyon, but what is the other guy?
Well, in the higher derivative models, typically when you have an equation of motion, say for a scalar field of this type,
so I know that generally you have more. But
you have a hidden. you have not one scalar, but you have more than one.
Yeah, but from the point of view of string theory, for instance, there should be only one degree of freedom associated to the taxon field, not two. So.
Yes, and okay, from the point of view of the string theory, I cannot answer because this is an effective action. So, no locality in a sense emerges because of the Wittgenstein's free vertex interaction. And well, this field in some sense is related to the other by a kinetic operator. So I certainly it comes from the same physical object. However, I don't think there is some or I don't have a trend in interpretation of this auxiliary field in terms of string theory. Just because I started from an effective action, so it's not. I don't think it's straightforward. There is a straightforward answer to this.
Okay, well, if there aren't any more questions, John, how long will you be?
For a week.
So, all week. So, you can ask some questions again. But which office are you in?
251.
All right, well, let's see you.